Hello and welcome to NWR Connectivity, comma, the show where I don't know. I was trying to do a comma splice joke, but I just it feels like a hard one to do in audio. I'm Neil Ronahan. This is NWR Connectivity, episode 378. I'm joined by John Raritan.
Howdy, everybody.
And Alex DeFreitas.
I'm seeing stars.
Ooh, and we're going to talk all about Sea of Stars and how a bunch of people can try to just like make fun of people that don't like write English normally. I don't know.
This game has made me realize that maybe I'm not as good at writing in English as I thought I was. Because all those examples are like, that seems fine.
Well, it's also like comma splices are kind of how people talk, and this is dialogue. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, it is the thing where proper English, you don't have comma splices like this. You could just be, you know, whatever dime store English major that's just using a semicolon or an M dash every other fucking sentence.
Can you imagine if every text box in this game just had semicolons? Because it would be like every third text box.
Yeah.
Like, it would be amazing.
And it's, I don't know, it's, I try not to dive too far into the discourse, but I just think seeing Jason Schreier be very upset about comma splices and try to do that to take down a game that he didn't discover or something. And it's also, it's even funnier to me because he was one of the first people that I saw talk about how good CrossCode is. And I think CrossCode is fine. I think I gave it a pretty positive review. I just don't think it's like the game of the forever.
Sure.
But CrossCode also has a shit ton of comma splices.
I'm gonna go back through Schreier's books and find a comma splice.
Yeah.
I'll bet I can find one.
I was gonna say, I do really like Press Reset, but you have to wonder.
He gets
are
a pass.
There splices?
His was that Press Reset. Press Reset was the second book. The second book was tremendous.
It's a weirdly uplifting bummer, is how I would describe that book. Yeah. It's great.
Well, it's also his first book is fine, but his first book, and he admits it in the second book, which I really appreciated how he presented it, is the first book is more like, I'm going to like take a step back and just tell you these stories without going into the issues of like, there's crunch in this industry. Also, the first book is like, it's just white dudes making games.
God intended, Neil.
And I'm happy that the second... happy that the second book like is saying there are more game developers than white men, which, you know, this is important to show
sometimes
some
it's Japanese men, Neil.
Yeah,
sometimes diversity.
There is one woman, everybody disrespects her. That's the way it works. Or it becomes like I forget her name, the Ghostwire Tokyo director who then like left Capcom after she got really famous. That was just the kind of thing where like a woman appeared on stage, now we love her. I'm blanking on her name, but
no,
it's just
but
one
know
of those
exactly
things
who you're talking about. Yeah,
and it
she's really, like really,
I mean,
cute
like,
on stage and everybody was like fell in love with
honestly,
her overnight.
Good for her distancing herself from Ghostwire Tokyo, because I don't know if y'all played Ghostwire Tokyo. It sucks. So
it is on in my PlayStation life. It's on my wish list or my library hold list to check out at some point. It is like, you know, celebrate whenever Jeff Keighley trots out someone that's not that was another thing where it was all dudes for Summer Games Fest, and then there were a couple women, but like some of the way they were inserted into the Gamescom opening night live thing were just like preposterous. It was just like, here's a woman to talk about cosplay.
He occasionally cut away to a woman who was theoretically co-hosting the event with him. She wasn't allowed within 100 feet of him, but she was co-hosting the event with him.
But don't worry, I mean, Jeff Keighley just has all of his friends, you know. He's not, maybe he's one of those people where he can't be, he's got his wife and he can't be friends with any other women, or else his wife
is Jeff Keighley married.
I have no idea. I know his dad is like an executive at IMAX.
I knew that. Jeff Keighley didn't get where he is through his own blood, sweat, and tears. That's for sure.
I mean, it's one of those things where like I do enjoy dunking on him. He has been doing this since he was like 16.
You'd think he'd be better at it.
He happens to have a parent who is like in the film industry, so it was, you know, accessible for him. It is very much like, is there privilege involved in how Jeff Keighley got to where he is? Yes, there is. But like, he's put in work. He's done some stuff. I might disagree with some of his execution, but he does stuff. He's got some bona fides.
He did defend side boob on Mass Effect on Fox News.
What? I forgot about that. I missed that one. Oh my god,
that sounds exciting.
This is from like 2008 or 2009.
I'll look that up later. That's great.
He's been through it. He's earned his stripes.
He is it. He's been through it.
He's him.
I feel like it's itself. Like every couple years he does something pretty good, and I'm like, all right, man. Like, you're not the scum of it. Like, there could be worse people running this thing, like the ESA.
That's true. I don't think he's like doxed anyone.
Yeah, and generally, I feel like outside of him, like, doing like stomping on the ashes of E3, we haven't even recorded since the Gamescom thing, because that was like a week ago when we're recording or something. I watched the pre-show because I know Alex, you were also a fan of the Kyle Bosman.
Yes, that's my boy.
He hosted the pre-show, and I was like, oh, watch this because I like Kyle. Delayed input. Patreon subscriber over here. And they just have like there was a bit where like he talked with Keighley, and they just like, so how does this compare to E3? And I'm like, can we just like let it go? Can we move on? Like, you won. E3 is dead. Like, just take the fact that you won and have three events every year and go on.
From sneaking into E3 as a teenager to just crapping on its corpse over and over again.
It's a character. Should arc. Probably look into Jeff Keighley for his monopoly on not E3 events. Jeff Keighley is a bigger threat to the games industry than Microsoft could ever hope to be.
He did very much like Brutus this situation.
Yeah.
Because he was working with the ESA and it was like, y'all suck, and then backed off and then just stabbed him right in the back.
Yeah.
And from what I heard, we talked with Joel and Alex Arona, who went to Summer Games Fest, the event. Seems like that event's pretty cool. Hopefully that has a future, because I don't think E3 does.
No.
No, E3 only has a past.
It's got a very good past. I like the past of E3.
It's got a mountainous.
Yeah.
And valleyous.
Yeah. Past. Yep. So anyway, we're here ostensibly to talk about Nintendo video games sometimes. We are going to talk about Sea of Stars for a while, and then have some conversation coming out of that, and then do some listener mail. Does that sound like a good plan, fellas?
Sounds great. I love Sea of Stars.
How much did you play?
In its entirety. Yep. I finished it this afternoon.
You played, what, 10 minutes?
I went back and played like another 10.
Oh, good for you.
And then, to be honest, the Xbox cloud crashed on me, and that game doesn't use autosaves. And I was like, this game sucks. And so I stopped.
Oh, no. I believe it does use autosaves at some points, but
okay, yes. Yeah, I've only encountered books. When I loaded it back up, it was like, go back to this book lot of cutscenes.
Yeah, it's I've definitely had it where like if I go into a boss room, I'll see a little like saving icon. Sure.
The book
like
will show up.
It has
the side.
Like the Metroid hidden saves.
Yeah, I mean it's not even hidden. The game does have, but like yeah, it does. It is similar in effect to that. I will say in your defense, Sean, I think the first half an hour is a little slow.
I think it's fine. If you play the first 10 minutes, then you played actual gameplay, and then if you played the following 10 minutes, you only read dialogue.
Yeah,
so it was a lot of comma splices back to back.
Yeah, once the flashback starts, that keeps going.
The flashback also, I feel like it makes you think it's going to be a lot longer than it is, and it still does take some time, but then it's just like you meet up back to the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
And then from there, it kicks from that point.
I assume I was approaching the end of the flashback.
Probably. Did you get to where like the Lunar Twins were training?
Yeah, I was in like the academy.
Yeah.
and which I expected to be like a game, and then it was just them talking at me for like a really long time about how I was doing all this training, and like I kind of thought they were going to teach me to play the game there, and then they didn't, but that's fine.
They do not. I was also kind of expecting that. Now that we've gotten John's portion out,
that's all I can contribute.
Alex and I have both been playing Sea of Stars. There is a review up on Nintendo World Report, written by Jordan Rudick. He gave it a 10 out of 10. I have been talking to Jordan about that. I helped edit the video. Alex helped supply footage for the video. It was a real team effort.
It was, well, didn't I was Joel also
Joel
doing,
also, yeah. Although I don't know if Joel listens to the show, but I will call him out a little bit because he's like, oh, I'll get you some footage. Like half of it hideously broke the embargo, which didn't matter for IGN. But I'm just like looking at this footage. I'm like, I can't use like half of it. Like he's using a character that they said not to talk about. Some of it, I mean, it was useful. Like so, spot to see where I used PC footage in the review. There's like 15 seconds of it. I primarily used your footage, Alex. So thank you very much.
Yep, I was really easy to stick to the embargo when I had only just started that game when I started recording.
Yeah, because you had your review of Bomb Rush Cyberpunk, which took precedence. But I think Sea of Stars is one of the best video games I've ever played. Just full stop. Like
high praise.
It is incredible. I wrote this out to somebody where I said that I thought to myself, I think this is better than Chrono Trigger, and then just sat in silent contemplation for like 10 minutes because I was like, do I really mean this? And it's an extremely good video game. And for me, it comes to the fact that the combat never really gets old, despite the fact that I feel like I don't think it ever gets overly complicated. Like you have your basic attacks. You have three skills and like an ultimate ability. And then like combos with other characters. And a lot of that stuff kind of gets laid out early on. And how the game makes the combat always stay fresh is that they do a good job of having a lot of enemy variety. Seems like a game where they really thought about like how many battles do we want to have in an area as you move on. I remember I've had a lot of conversations with especially like indie developers working on RPGs that like you try to look to be like, okay, like the pacing in Chrono Trigger is fantastic, and you go and like study it like a science where you're like, oh, you go in this area and you have four battles and it takes about, you know, 20 minutes to get through here. So then you look at it where you're like, okay, so in my game in this area, I want to make sure I'm kind of hitting that same pace because that worked. And it seems like that's something that Sabotage, the developer of this game, it's the same folks who made The Messenger, which a game that I gave a 10 out of 10 back in 2018. It's a very good Ninja Gaiden Metroidvania game. It seems like Sabotage just like they paid attention to pacing. I feel like there's a lot of areas where you go through it and it's not as long as you think it would be to get through an area. But it's not like you feel like you're shortchanged because there's just so many freaking areas to go to. An immense amount of variety in where you go, what the locales look like. The pixel art is absolutely stunning and gorgeous at times. Mm-hmm. Like incredible vistas. There legitimately were times in this game where it is kind of like you're like on a cliff and I like stopped to pause and just be like, this is an incredibly gorgeous view of this world that they've created.
They do some really cool stuff with like I don't know exactly how they do it, but like you'll have like moving light sources that are casting like 3D shadows over like the 2D pixel art. I assume there must be some sort of like invisible mesh over the top of the 2D or something that's doing that. Like I don't know how it works.
That they have like real lighting in their game. And yeah, I mean, like it shows.
I'd be very curious to know exactly how they're pulling it off because it like even just in a little bit I played, like when you're going up the elevator into like the academy or whatever, and you can see like the shadow from the elevator casting and going over cliffs and like rippling in 3D as it goes over the environment in a way that like a 2D shadow just couldn't do. And I don't know how they did that, and it's awesome.
Well, John, you should open up the Google Doc where we're compiling questions sent to the developer.
Okay.
and added a question about that. Yeah, like I know they do something with the lighting because I don't think you played far enough in the game to get to this point. You have the ability to, like, you basically you can change the time of day on the fly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
It's something that, like, first it's like limited to specific points, and then as you progress, then you can do it at any point. So essentially, unless you're in like a cave, anywhere on the game, they like, so they have to have some kind of rigging for a light source.
Sure.
Because like pretty much anywhere in the overworld, your little dude just like sticks out a hand and then the sun goes around the earth.
That's really cool.
And the music dynamically changes with it too.
Yeah. Music is gorgeous. It's got the same, I forget the guy, Rainbow Dragon Eyes, I think is his handle for this one. I think he's going by his real name. It's the same guy who did the Messenger soundtrack. They also have Yasunori Mitsuda compose some guest tracks. I'll be honest in that I can't tell specifically what's a Mitsuda track and what is everybody else involved with the game. And I feel like that's a testament to just the quality of the soundtrack, that it's just that damn good.
Yeah, that's a compliment.
Like when you have a soundtrack that blends in with Mitsuda's guest tracks, then you're doing pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, the Messenger soundtrack is fantastic. That's such a good soundtrack, especially the what was the name of their DLC, like the
Picnic Panic.
Yeah, that I think I like that better than the base soundtrack. I love that soundtrack.
I am probably going to replay the Messenger when I polish this game off. These folks make very good video games.
So this game is, it's a prequel to the Messenger, right?
Yes. There are, without getting into I guess they're spoilers. They are not full of shit when they're like, this is a standalone story, but there are moments that reference the Messenger that are just sublime.
Cool. Okay.
What kind of prequel? Is this like hundreds of years prior to the Messenger or
thousands?
Okay.
Maybe
thousands.
I don't think it ends and it's like, oh, now it's the Messenger. Here's the ninja man. But there are even like, it's really subtle stuff. I mean, maybe it's not that subtle, but there's like certain characters and like, you could be like, oh, that dude kind of looks familiar. Or maybe like an item and you're like, wait a minute. That's cool. I really, really like what they're doing with this world and this universe. Maybe I could hear the argument that maybe they're a little bit too up their own ass. But it's a up their own ass amount that I'm on board with.
Well, when you've made two video games in a row that noted gaming website NWR has given 10 out of 10 reviews, I think you've kind of earned the right to be like a little bit up your own ass.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like, that's why it's like that. Like they're tackling some heady topics. Like there's a lot of and maybe they're not doing the I don't think the story is bad, but it's also like I would not point to be like this is the perfect video game story. It's a pretty solid story. It's not like the writing is charming and fun. I think some of the characters are extremely memorable. Jordan calls out Warrior Cook Garl. That dude completely rules. I love him so much. Just a lot of very fun characters throughout this game. I could see a desire for wanting more depth in it, but I'm also fine just because, as I've learned over the years, I'm very much, when it comes to RPGs, like give me some rock solid mechanics and I can forgive some mediocrity in the story.
Sure.
Like Xenoblade 3.
Yes. Yeah, that helps.
But I mean, even with Xenoblade 3, it's like that story can go all over the place, but the gameplay is very good and the vibes of that story are immaculate.
Well, and I feel like, yeah, the key thing for me in any game is, could I take the story out and still enjoy this game? And with Xenoblade, I think that's true. Yeah. I don't know if that's how you feel about this or not.
There's some emotional resonance with some of the moments.
Sure. Yeah, it definitely can be better with the story.
There is that drive and motivation as opposed to like, I'm just going to the next point.
Yeah.
But it is like, no, like exploring that world is a joy in and of itself.
Right. Does the story ever kick in? Because I am about five hours in and it's not.
Where are you?
I just got on board with the pirates to go to an island. That is shrouded in darkness.
Okay, so you are just getting to that island for the very first time.
Right. I just entered into a town.
You might be like an hour or two away from things getting a little deeper.
Okay.
This game also does a thing like so the runtime of it is, I think you could probably finish it somewhere between 20 and 30 hours. There are multiple points, and I talked about this with Jordan, because there were points where he finished the game well in advance before me. He also got a code like a week before
anyone else did. I mean, it's Jordan, so
yeah,
had finished it like before they even sent him the code.
But there were multiple times where he's like, this is going to be the end of the game. And then it wasn't. And like, this game really does have several points where I'm like, you could have made this the final boss. And it would have been like, oh, no, that was fulfilling. But it just keeps going, which
in a good way, I'm guessing
in a good way, a good way, because usually it's kind of like you have this climactic battle and they're like, and there's a twist at the end of it. Let's see what happens next. And it's all like, you know, the story, it's a linear path. It's not like it's like episodic in that regard. But it is like the world starts to open up more and more as you go through these parts of the story. Like, you're at a point where you are going in a straight line.
Yes.
And you are going in a straight line for the majority of the game. There are parts where you then have more ability to move around.
It's funny to arrive in like a world map section and it's basically like a Mario Brothers world map where you just you essentially just go to the next thing.
Well, it's very Chrono Trigger. It's extremely Chrono Trigger.
Chrono Trigger at least kind of like tries to hide the fact that it's linear.
Yeah, yeah.
Sea of Stars is like, you just walk like five steps this way to either go fishing or 10 steps the other way to go to the next story moment.
Yeah.
Like, those are your options.
Yeah.
And the fishing is quite good.
Yeah, no, the fishing's fun. And like that, have you played Wheels yet? I don't think you might not have played Wheels yet.
No, I have. I played a good like 20 minutes of Wheels when I first found it. I like that quite a bit. It took me, you have to read the guide in order to like actually understand what's going on, because the first time I played it, I was like, I'll figure it out. Yep. No, you do have to kind of pay attention. There's some things you can intuit, but no, it's inventive. Like, it's not a mini game I've ever come across. It's not a card game. It's not a board game, really. It's like this weird, like, clockwork gears kind of game.
Like, I'm trying to like explain this to John, and use it as a way to be like, how do I even explain this game? You face a computer player. Each of you pick two figurines that fall in, like, it's like, you know, warrior and mage. There's like an archer that you get later and more. Mm-hmm. And
it's like a D&D mini.
But you basically like spin these dials, and the dials could be an icon that represents the figurine that you have to the left, or one that goes to the right, or like you can have like a shield go up over your base. Mm-hmm. And you need to get at least three of one of those icons to then like either charge up your base or get closer to doing an action with one of your player with one of your figurines. The figurines can also get experience, both by sometimes they are on these things that you're rotating. You also get that by attacking, and then they power up and level up, and like they'll have, you know, hit for harder damage. But there is, you know, it's not like it's just like this hugely intensive strategic thing. It is like you're gambling to an extent.
Yeah,
because it is just like it is the role of the slot machine. But there is like the, oh, do I try to, you know, like lock in these three things now with the hopes that maybe I'll get another one? And there is definitely a little like rhyme and reason to it. But I like it because it's not, it's fun to mess around with. It is not crazy in depth. But there's like enough. I feel like it's a good analog for the combat in this game, and that like once you kind of like figure out the basics of the combat, it's kind of just that with permutations on it throughout the game. Mm-hmm. It has like everything has a timed hit, much like it's extremely Mario and Luigi and Super Mario RPG in that regard. like right. it, like some of the special attacks that you have, like it's just a Mario and Luigi special attack. Like there's a boomerang mm-hmm. that you get pretty early that is just like kicking
the shell.
Yeah, it's a shell. And there's one, I mean, like some of the other, a lot of them are just like, you know, you time it when you come into contact with the enemy to then get, you know, second hit. You
can also do the same. Basically the hammer.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you can block as well. Although it is funny that they kind of call us out in like the tutorial part for it, where they're like, you don't have to do this if you don't want to. Like, it's not, it makes a difference. It doesn't make that big of a difference. Like, you can essentially, well, it's more that like, if you want to be efficient, I think it makes a big difference.
So the thing is that there's those locked attacks, those the big special moves that your enemies can do yeah. where you have the icons that show up. And my issue right now, and I'm not sure if this clears up later, is that for a lot of them, I can't unlock them. Even when I do get both attacks off, or when you press the A button at the right moment. But for the ones that I can, it feels like I have to get that extra yeah. attack in order to make sure that I'm defending myself properly.
Like once you have like a, you know, but you know, a better variety of abilities and stuff, it is so rewarding when you basically go into a battle and just don't take damage because you just wipe out the lock systematically. And like you can do things to like delay turns and stuff.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that's when it starts getting a lot more fiddly. I kind of, as we're talking about it now, I forget how in the first couple hours, like you really just have that original trio and
yeah,
like you only have, you know, the sun and moon to damage type. Like you're just like, it's pretty limited. I think that works because it kind of teaches you the basics of the combat. But at a certain point, then you have a lot of different types of magic. I think you really only have like the blunt and sword melee attacks, but there's just a lot. There is lock variety as you go on.
Good. That's the thing that I'm kind of missing, because as much as the pacing is very good, and I'm not sure if you noticed this in my footage, but like I would do the footage in chunks that like made sense, where there's a beginning and an end to this portion yeah. of the story. And they were always hitting like that 30 to 35 minute mark.
Yeah.
Almost perfectly, which I think is ideal for this kind of game.
Deliberate.
Yes. But the besides that, like the pace at which I get new characters, like I only have that original trio and I'm about 6-ish hours in.
They take their time giving you characters.
Okay.
Like
I do smell a new character around the corner because I'm seeing things in the locks that I don't have answers
yes.
for.
I mean, yes, there is one around the corner. And then I think that he might have another like 10 hours until another one. I forget exactly some of the timing.
But maybe that's a good thing, because then they'll give each character like a lot of time to breathe.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the is there like a party size limit? Like, do you still, can you only have a max of three people?
You have three, but you can swap them okay. in and out, like Final okay. Fantasy.
Like whenever?
Yep.
Without costing like an action or?
Nope. Yeah, you can swap them in and out.
Oh,
okay. However you want.
So like you don't really have a party limit.
Yeah. Like gotcha. You, like it is, like you only have three on the table at once, but
right.
like if it's, you know, I don't have. I don't have Sun Boy in. I can switch Moon Girl out for Sun Boy, Valer and Zale. I know their names. It just don't feel like Sun Boy and Moon Lady,
Shark Boy and Lava Girl.
Yeah,
I was thinking the same thing.
Can you replace the main characters in the party?
Just one of them, I guess. Of a battle. Yeah.
Okay.
Like, yeah, whoever you pick as your leader, like at the start of every battle, like that character will be there. But you can swap out the other ones however you want. And like I have, yeah, Valer has been my main character. Like I can swap her out in the battle. It's just when I go into the battle, she'll always be in it. Yeah, my game of the year so far in a year of bangers. This one is the bangeriest.
Yeah, game of the year is going to be interesting this year.
Yeah, it's going to be a bloodbath.
You know who's not going to win it? Zelda is totally not going to win.
That's, yeah. I mean, luckily, I guess Zelda's still winning for me purely because my actual game of the year isn't on a Nintendo system.
Yeah, yeah.
So that helps.
Just by judging, like, what our site discourse has been on Tears of the Kingdom, a game that I think is amazing.
It's great.
Yeah, it's a very good video game.
Tears of the Kingdom is still my game of the year.
It's just to be clear. I'm really struggling with how much of Tears of the Kingdom isn't a new game. That's what draws it into a problem for me. It's so reliant on the previous game in a way that no other Zelda game has been, I think.
But it dwarfs the previous game.
It's better. That's absolutely. But it cannot exist without the previous game.
Yeah. And then Pikmin 4. Pikmin 4 is incredible.
Pikmin, that might be kind of our black horse game of the year.
Black horse or dark horse.
Dark horse, whatever we call it.
I still need to finish the post game at Pikmin 4, but that is a very good video game. Super Mega Baseball 4, also an incredible. That should be a game of the year contender too.
We'll just let you have it this year. Rather than having to decide, we'll just give you Super Mega Baseball 4.
So
Bomb Rush Cyberpunk. That's game of the year.
Sure.
Yeah, now that we've talked about Super Mega Baseball and Bomb Rush Cyberpunk, let's talk about the John, you brought this up of Sea of Stars, very much a inspired by a spiritual successor of Chrono Trigger and other Super Nintendo era RPGs. I believe Sabotage also mentioned Illusion of Gaia and Super Mario RPG as inspirations, which, yes, those are definitely inspirations on this video game. But it's more thinking about what games that were inspired by, you know, like classics have surpassed them. And I think, Alex, I feel like you would say that Bomb Rush Cyberpunk has surpassed Jet Set Radio.
Yes, that is kind of the point of my review, is to kind of agree with some of the people who are saying that Bomb Rush Cyberpunk is just Jet Set Radio, and be like, yeah, it's taking so many cues to the point of like it's just legally distinct Jet Set Radio 3. But when taken in context of a franchise that hasn't been served in over 20 years, and the game that was re-released is a Dreamcast game that plays like ass, and Jet Set Radio Future is a game that even Phil Spencer can't bring back from the dead. Bomber Cyberpunk is incredible.
I love the vibe of the original game, but yeah, it plays like shit.
Yeah. Well, have you played it recently? It is garbage.
I feel like when it came to Xbox 360, I think that's the last time I played it. And like,
it was like 2012 is when it got re-released on a bunch of other platforms. Yeah, no, the vibes are incredible. So this is a franchise that I've been like a fan of from the sidelines, because the music and the aesthetic and everything that it's going for is incredible. When you sit down to play it, it controls. It's hard to describe exactly how it controls, because it really doesn't control at all. You have weird momentum. You're like floaty, but you also like fall like a rock. It's hard to predict exactly how you're going to move. And I know that there are people out there who have learned the movement of Jet Set Radio and can enjoy it. And Jet Set Radio Future, to its credit, is a lot better, but it's still not great. Like, it's still clunky in parts, and it does not stand up to modern control standards for 3D games. Bomber Cyberpunk is the first time I was able to like pick up this style of game, and in the first 5 minutes, just feel at home, and not be good at it immediately, but for everything to click and be able to understand how to vibe with the movement. And then, of course, it incorporates all of the aesthetic choices of Jet Set Radio, and then combines it with this story that's like not great, but the way it's told is very fun. Like the cutscene direction, they make some interesting choices. Like, it's not just 3D characters talking to each other. Like, there's some interesting cinematic flourishes to it. And the character interactions and the dialogue is like all on point. So Yeah, Bomber Cyberfunk for me is the Jet Set Radio that I've always wanted, and I am replaying it on PC right now. And with mods, a nice thing you can do is it's so easy to mod this game. I think they must have like made this game with the thought that people were going to do this in the first place. So your phone is the way that you control music, and you can just kind of like cycle through and find a song and just hit play. And then it will shuffle from there on. And with this one mod that I have, which like came out within a week of the game coming out, you can just add whatever music you want through a folder. And so people have just been adding Jet Set Radio music. And
yeah,
it's basically
exactly
just
what you do.
Yep. You just put in the Jet Set Radio and Jet Set Radio Future soundtracks and you just jam out. And it's like, it's kind of become my favorite MP3 player or radio. I'll just sit there and listen to the music and jam out and do combos. Like actually completing all the story objectives and side objectives is just something that I'm kind of doing along the way of just jamming out to the great music vibe and movement, because the movement is, it's really, really good. They find a nice balance between like having you kind of feel fast and doing a lot of tricks and feeling dynamic and cool, but also like you're not going too fast to the point where you can't do things that require a little bit more precision, or you can't like see your way through an environment. The one issue though is that the level design is great, but they don't like give you a whole lot to hang on to in order to like find your way through some of the levels. With the idea of you are going to figure it out yourself, but figuring out for yourself can sometimes be frustrating just because not everything is laid out clearly. And so there were definitely moments where I was like playing the same area for 30 minutes before I found the one thing that progress the story. Yeah. So those are the couple of knocks that I had to give it. But my initial reaction after completing the review is like, is this a 10 for me? And thankfully some of the other staffers were able to be like, hey, yeah, there's some issues with this, so maybe bring it down. But like in my heart of hearts, like I am loving this game so much.
I look forward to playing it. It's much like you did not play Sea of Stars until you finished Bomb Rush Cyberpunk. I need to finish Sea of Stars before I play Bomb Rush Cyberpunk.
Yeah. No, it's a real good time.
I do vibe with that feeling of this is a 10 for me, but maybe not for everyone else.
Yeah.
I get that.
And we did discover some interesting tech stuff over the weekend.
This wound up being like super technically interesting.
Yeah. So over the weekend I was like, oh, okay, let me try and put out some sort of content before the review, because I wanted to play through all of it before I gave it the high score that I was feeling at the time. So we did the tech comparison between the Switch, the PC, and Steam Deck versions of the game. And the real cool part about the Switch one is that it has a Unleash the Beast mode, which unlocks the frame rate.
I love that it's called that.
Yes. I wish they would have like had like a little subtitle so you could tell what it meant. But
yeah, I
do
watching
like
your footage and be like, there's nothing on screen saying what this does. Like, it's totally just for you to figure out.
I don't know. I like that power move where they're like, everybody knows.
Yeah.
We don't need to say it.
Yeah, well, it's very funny because I'm comparing it to the Steam version. Like, wait, you can't unleash the beast on the PC. Why can't you unleash the beast?
Switch Master Race.
Yes. Only the Switch has the power to unleash the beast.
And only the Switch has the power to hit 45 frames per second.
To kind of like shakily hit between 40 and 50.
Yeah.
But no, it's neat. There's like some shadow issues. Like it's some things look like they're just like, instead of having shadows, they're just completely lit.
Yeah.
And I would have known
was like a draw distance, like a really short draw distance on some of the world shadows or something.
That must have been it or something. You would know better than I do, John, but if you're playing it and you're not like constantly comparing it to the PC version, then I think it works just fine. The one thing that like keeps me up at night is that I was spreading misinformation about the Steam Deck version because I didn't boot into the game in the handheld mode. Like, I was testing it in docked mode. And so in docked mode, they only let you go up to 720p for whatever reason, mm-hmm. which is odd because the Steam Deck's native display is 800, 1280 by 800. So I was like, oh, that's curious. Why won't they let you go to the 16 by 10 aspect ratio for this unless you like go to this weird wonky aspect ratio or resolution where they take pixels out from the what was it, the length?
Does it fill the screen when you do that? Like, does it stretch to fill the screen or are there bars?
What do you mean?
Like
on docked?
Well, I mean, even when you're playing it handheld, so if it hits 720 but the screen is 800, is it filling the screen?
You would have the bars on handheld.
Okay.
So gotcha. Like I was, but what you would do is you would just knock it down to the resolution below that
to hit the right aspect ratio. Gotcha. Yeah.
Yes. Or ideally you would hit it to 800, which is something that you can do if you boot it into handheld mode first. Which was my critical mistake. I did not do that. And so when I did my report, I'm like, oh, this game doesn't go to 800p, which it absolutely does. You just have to make sure that you're booting the game in handheld. And then if you want to go even further than that, you can in docked, as long as you enter into desktop mode, drag the game over into the monitor or display that you're going to be playing it in, and then boot it in that way. So it's a little convoluted.
I feel like Steam Deck does not get credit for that. If I have to do that much work to get your game to run at the appropriate resolution, then you don't get the credit, Steam Deck.
Yeah, Steam Deck is weird because it's in this liminal space between, like, you can kind of mess with it like a PC, but also there are things that are locked off if you're in the Steam OS specifically.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, I was impressed, like by default, capped at 30, but like a perfect 30. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think we ever saw any frame rate dips really in the 30 FPS mode. And full 1080 docked and 720 handheld.
I wonder if they could have knocked it down to 900 and get to a 60 FPS.
Right. It would depend on where they were running into trouble. I feel like the fact that they were able to hit 1080 and get the frame rate as high as they were, I'm assuming there's something else. Like, resolution just didn't seem to be a problem for them.
Right.
So I assume there's something else affecting the frame rate.
Also, no anti-aliasing.
No, it's a very crunchy game. But I kind of almost feel like it works for the art style.
Yes.
But, I will say, like, even in the uncapped mode, like in the test we ran, there were long segments that were hitting 60. Like, it was definitely 45 a lot of the time, but there were areas it seemed like you were going through that were just almost a locked 60, which was cool. And I think you mentioned it in your video, but it'd be fun if the next Switch is backwards compatible to come back to this game and see if it can just lock to 60. We should probably at some point make a list of uncapped frame rate games. It'd be this and like MLB The Show are two games I want to come back to, because that one's I don't remember if they kept that the next year, but the first year they did MLB, it was uncapped, which was fascinating. And it was running at like 40 frames per second. And it's like, man, that's weird. Like that it's getting above 30. They should have capped it, but it's fascinating that they didn't. And I feel like we could do some interesting experiments with that.
So let's finish up the show talking about some listener mail.
Okay.
Our first piece comes from Cherry Goblin, who says, "Hey, Connectivity, I've always heard how Nintendo cannot bring back Punch-Out because it would be insensitive in this current environment. If Nintendo brings back Punch-Out with the original characters, would any backlash really affect Nintendo's bottom line? Better question, is Nintendo just impervious from politically charged controversy, meaning that they could get away with releasing something like a Punch-Out or, dare I say, Mother 3? So there's, here's what they probably couldn't do now: make a Punch-Out like they made in 2009.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that game. A game that I gave a 10 out of 10 on Nintendo World Report.
Yeah, noted racist Neil Ronahan.
They're looking at that game. It's what I always refer to as like the Tropic Thunder line. Is that like there was a time that Tropic Thunder that could come out, and it was when it came out. Any later than that, and like Robert Downey Jr. would be murdered. Like,
I was hoping this was like one of those Atlas line comparisons.
I mean, it kind of is.
It's the Atlas line of racism as opposed to pedophilia.
This is not to say, like, it's also like if you do take into it, like, I mean, the point of Tropic Thunder is that like they're kind of, you know, it's a satire. And like Ben Stiller playing the I Am Sam paralogue is like, is that offensive? Yes, it's also very funny. But like that is the kind of thing, like, you could not put out a movie with Robert Downey Jr. playing an Australian, playing a guy in blackface, and not have it be a political debacle. You could barely put out a Barbie movie without that being a political debacle. And I feel like this is the same thing with Punch Out, that like if Punch Out came out like, 7 years later, after 2009, deliberate deployment of 7 years later, do your math. If that happened, I don't think that Punch Out game is well received. There might be a line where like Punch Out's such a small series that it wouldn't have mattered. Put all your racial slurs into Star Fox games and you'll get away with it. But
there are a lot of made up racial slurs in Star Fox games.
Yeah.
Especially Star Fox Assault.
Yep. I think like the original Punch Out like definitely does play into stereotypes, but I think that like it's like once they give more personality to the boxers that you're against, that's when you start being like, okay, fellas, maybe we could tune down the Disco Kid and make him less effeminate.
I say do it.
You would.
Here's my opinion. We all look and sound funny to each other, and it's okay to laugh at everybody. And if we're all laughing at everybody, then we're good.
I think you could. I think you could do it in a nuanced way. That's just not Punch Out 2009.
Yeah, I honestly. I think you could do it, and I think there would definitely be some corner of the internet that would be like, how dare you? And it would not affect Nintendo sales in the slightest.
It is, and when we looked at this question, I do want to point out what is still the funniest thing that I think Nintendo has ever done is when Tomodachi Life came out on 3DS. There was a whole kerfuffle about how there was no gay marriage in that game, and Nintendo put out a statement saying that the next Tomodachi game will have gay marriage, and it has been almost a decade. They have not put out another Tomodachi game.
Yeah.
Nintendo's decision was, we will tell the people what they want to hear, and then never make another game in the series again. They are either going to have a shitstorm of people that remember what they said, or they are waiting long enough where everybody forgot, and they could just do whatever they want in their Tomodachi Life games.
I have to be careful what I say on the podcast. I don't think that it would actually, once again, I think you would have a very vocal corner of the internet that I don't think would hurt Nintendo's bottom line at all.
I mean, look at the Harry Potter game.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's necessarily analogous to this type of thing, but like there is a pretty loud quarter of the world that is
made
like
the game sell better,
probably because they kept it in the news. But I'm not, and it's also, I mean, this is where I'm at in my life, is I'm not touching the Harry Potter game. Like J.K. Rowling can eat it. But I'm not going to be here to like, John, what's wrong with you?
Yeah, don't I played you, the Harry Potter
don't
game.
You care about trans people?
Anybody who's listened to this podcast for long enough knows that I have a pretty strong separate art from artist policy, especially in that instance where like I don't know that the artist we're trying to punish was even really involved. in this game. Yeah, she's getting money, but like, I think she also gets money whenever you buy a Lego set. So maybe you need to prioritize what you're not going to spend money on a little better.
Yeah. I mean, it's,
anyway, look forward to my Switch review in November. That game's going to blow on Switch. I'm so excited.
I forgot that didn't get canceled.
No, it made so much money, they cannot cancel it.
Yep.
Like, and not only can they not cancel it, they have like legitimate justification to actually put money into making the Switch version good, and I'm excited because it's either going to be a disaster or like a technical marvel. and like either way, I'm good. So I'm legitimately excited to review that game. I'm also the only person on the website that'll touch it, so you know, that's my burden.
Back to Punch Out. If they ever do return to the series, and I'm not sure if they would want to. I mean, maybe they want to lose money.
It's the kind of thing where I don't think Punch Out fits into the kind of games that they make anymore.
Yeah, I mean, if it comes back, I'll be pleasantly surprised. But I just don't think that they need to do the whole nationality stereotype thing. Like, that's not, you can do goofy opponents other ways that don't have to lean on stereotypes. Yeah, like it's King, a very King easy Hippo fix.
From the South Pacific.
just don't do King Hippo again. Like, just make all new characters. Like Little Mac, keep him.
I mean, it is one of those things where, and like, I kind of agree with you, but it's also like, that's what is Punch Out, but you beating up stereotypes. Like, that is one of the key, like, boxing, Little Mac, and offensive stereotypes are part of the DNA of the series.
It really is one of those, like, be the American the Japanese think you are kind of games.
And it is, I mean, it's a complex, like, I love those games. They're all super fun to play. It would be cool if they could, like, figure out a way to make a new one. But I also, I haven't really thought about it until, like, Alex, you brought it up. Like, I just don't think that Nintendo in 2023 is a company that would put out a new Punch Out game, not for any like a stereotype reason. I just don't think that style of game is one that they make anymore.
I agree. Well, and I do think if you take the racism out of Punch Out, it loses all of its charm.
Well, we talk about spiritual successors. There's a game called Thunder Ray coming out on Switch in like 2 weeks that we'll see if we get a review code. I tried to find one. It looks like a very nicely animated Punch-Out game. And I have sought out a lot of games that try to come at the throne of Punch-Out over the years. I think there was a WiiWare game that I gave a negative review to, and the developer like tried to have me killed. But like, no one's ever really been able to do it. People have tried.
I think Nintendo, there was this game called ARMS.
But they didn't even lean into it. Like,
well, yeah, because they didn't put any racism in it, and that was the problem with ARMS. It didn't have nearly enough racism.
Yeah, I mean, ARMS could have put Donkey. Oh, wait, no, Punch Out did that, and that's actually terrible if you think about it.
Which is why you don't, and you just enjoy fighting Donkey Kong as a tiny man from Boston.
Yep.
What if the tiny man from Boston fought all the Mario characters, and that's the hook?
Okay.
Oh yeah, you could replace Glass Joe with Luigi. That's fine.
Yeah, Mario's like, Punch Out.
It's like Deadpool kills the Marvel Universe, but it's Lil Mac.
Is Lil Mac from Boston? He's from Boston in my head.
Oh, he's
is
like he's like from Brooklyn.
No, he's from like Bronx. He's from the Bronx, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Statue of Liberty is in the background. That's of the right
when
scenes.
You're training. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no. Here's what would happen at the end of this: this Lil Mac destroys the Mario Universe. Is Mario is the ref the whole time, and then like the final boss is like the ref just like bulks up, and it's like Mario just roided out.
It's Chris Pratt Mario.
Yeah, you know, that's I'll use that segue. Here's our next piece of listener mail. GX says, "Dear Mariologists, following the announcement of Charles Martinet's shift from active game voice actor to quote Mario ambassador, I frequently heard concerns that Nintendo wants to move Mario closer to the Illumination movie version in performance and or aesthetics. However, the argument almost always revolves around because the movie is popular and made a lot of money. I remain skeptical that the movie will have a meaningful impact on the game series. The movie's success comes from the success of the game series, and Miyamoto's oversight be damned, I can't see Nintendo giving that degree of creative power to Illumination. I just have a gut this doesn't feel like a Nintendo move reaction. Do you see the Illumination movie having a long-term impact on the Mario series, games or otherwise, or will this sub-brand remain a sub-brand?
I think I agree with GX that I don't think this is a direct reaction to the movie.
No. I the movie is like very complicated, especially with how successful it was.
Mm-hmm.
Is like just talking to people around the swirl of the movie over the past year or so. I get the sense that, and I don't even know if parts of Nintendo totally realize this. I think like NOA has a very good handle on like the popularity of this movie might completely redefine who or what Mario is to mm-hmm. a generation. And like that is like if you the way that I always look at it, and what I as I you know kind of thought about the prospect of the Mario movie and it being successful and how they've broadened the Mario brand is you look at the MCU. Like as a kid who like read comics in the 90s and you know kept up with them reasonably throughout most of my life, you get to a point where once like Iron Man and Avengers and all those movies start to pop off, what is the dominant incarnations of all of those characters? It is the movie version.
Right.
They're like you know, I mean, Nick Fury was a white dude in the original Marvel Universe. And yes, there was the Ultimates comic version that was essentially inspired by Samuel Jackson. And then, you know, he was Samuel Jackson. But now I would not be, I actually don't know off the top of my head if Nick Fury is a black guy in mainline Marvel comics, but he probably is.
Yeah.
But like all of like the popularity of characters, who's being used. There was a while where because Marvel did not have access to the X-Men license, they kind of just deprioritized X-Men in the comics, which is just hilarious because they were kind of the most popular series for a very long time. But the dominant viewpoint of all of these characters is from the movies, not the comics that have, you know, 50 to 70 years of history. And I think there's a very real possibility of that happening with Mario and other Nintendo characters that start to become a part of these broader media efforts. There is definitely going to be, you know, parents of the world and people who don't play video games that their version of Mario is going to be voiced by Chris Pratt. Their version of Bowser is going to be voiced by Jack Black. And I don't think that those the presentations of those characters is not, you know, it's not incompatible with the video game versions, but it's different.
Well, it's a Mario's been a blank slate this entire time.
Yeah.
And with the movie, like Mario is now a defined character and it remains to be seen if the video games will reconcile with that at all, or if they'll leave him as he is. You know, like imagine if a really popular Zelda movie came out where Link was just talking the whole time. What do you do in the next Zelda game? Can you make him talk? Like, you've kind of broken that barrier now.
Well, that's also, remember the Lego games where they didn't have talking?
Yeah, yeah.
Then the Lego movie came out and ruined that. Because kids expected Legos to talk.
Yeah.
Before then, it wasn't an issue. It was once that broke, like now, like, it is honestly going to be kind of, as we record this, maybe you all listening will know more, because we do have that 15-minute Super Mario Brothers Wonder Direct will be airing tomorrow morning. But, like, how Mario and the gang are presented in Mario Brothers Wonder, like, that could be a real telling point for what the future is going to be. And I do think Martinet, I don't think it's necessary. I don't think it's nefarious with Martinet. It definitely seems a little sus. But I think there is that part of Nintendo that realizes that, oh, this character has changed forever. We need to figure out how this branding is going to work. And I don't think it's going to impact the development of the games as much. It's just going to be some of the fringe story presentation stuff.
Right. Well, and the worst I would say as far as the Martinet stuff goes is that I assume, I mean, Martinet is getting, how old is he? Like,
he's late 60s.
yeah, he's been doing this for a while. There was always going to be a point at which he needed to transition out. And so I imagine that was a conversation that had been happening from his end too, like not just Nintendo. And this may have at worst, like provided an opportunity where they said, okay, this would be, if we want to transition out Mario, this would be the time to do it.
I think to how, when my own father, retired from his job, he wound up retiring a couple years early, even though he had planned to retire at a certain date, just because things changed in his job situation and it wound up like, okay, this is a very convenient time for me to leave.
Yep. Yeah, seeing out. And especially for Martin A, I assume as a ambassador of Mario, like, I assume they're still paying him.
Yeah.
Like, I assume now he just gets paid to the conventions he was already going to on his own dime.
It does bother me that WarioWare isn't going to have his voice. That is one thing that I'm, like, I don't know how I feel about that.
I'll be interested to see if they cast multiple voice actors now for all those characters, because he was doing everybody.
Yep.
Which probably saved Nintendo a good chunk of change. Yeah. But voice actors are cheap. I hear the Bayonetta one's free.
I wonder how much, like, presence the new Mario is going to have. Like, are they going to trot him out as someone to pay attention to as a part of the brand? Or is this just
Like his new someone voice doing actor? A gig?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting... It'll be Matt Mercer. Matt Mercer is just every Nintendo character now. Straight off of Ganondorf. Here's Matt Mercer's Mario. That'd be incredible.
No, I was going to say, like, I do think Nintendo does a pretty good job at some of their voice casting. So...
Yeah, they do. They could stand to have Matt Mercer in more stuff, honestly.
That would be fun. Yeah, no, him is. I was reflecting on some of the story stuff in Tears of the Kingdom that bugged me. Matt Mercer's performance as Ganondorf is not a thing that bothers me at all. It's incredible. No,
there could have been more of it.
Yeah, there should have been more Matt Mercer Ganondorf. Not enough.
Stop relegating the entire plot to flashbacks, you cowards.
Yeah, especially with Milktoast. Heroes, stupid goat boy.
Like, oh, you're talking about Raru specifically. I love Raru.
I mean, I'm talking about every hero in those flashbacks. Everybody's a putz.
It's mostly Zelda. God, I hate this version of Zelda.
I mean, it's even Raru is just like, there's nothing he's we can do. Dumb. We'll just be nice to the man who tried to kill me.
Yeah,
you gotta keep your enemies closer,
or you can kill them.
Yeah.
Well, Raru's nice. He's a nice goat boy.
Yeah, he does not put up much of a fight.
Even he's like, we're going to get these sages together. Is it going to work? Fuck no. It's not going to work. Going to have to cut off my fucking hand.
Spoilers, by the way, for Tears of the Kingdom.
I mean, spoilers for the tutorial of Tears of the Kingdom. You learn all of this like very early in the game, and then you learn it like six more times because they only did the cutscene once and they just replay it every time you finish a dungeon. My opinion of that game has slowly kind of, I still think it's great, but like my issues with the story have only grown since.
It's just more like, I think back to like, I believe I messaged you, John, when I was playing the opening being just like, bitch said Raru. Like, oh my God, we're so in.
Yeah.
We are so in. And then I started playing the game. I'm like, what is this bullshit?
They really blew their budget and creativity on that opening.
And then it
sort of stops.
And then like, I was so like, once I got the ability to get the teardrops, like I was just like, let's go find it. And then I started to realize more of the story. I'm like, oh, this is terrible. And then I just ignored everything related to that for like 50 hours of gameplay. Yep. As I proceeded to get 100 shrines and do all this other stuff. And then I finally was like, I guess I should just like complete the square of this stupid, like, it's definitely spoiler territory, but like the fucking dragon, like,
I actually liked the dragon. I was just disappointed that we reversed the dragon. I thought that was my way of dealing with my least favorite character in the game.
Yeah,
I was like, cool, that problem solved.
We should put a spoiler marker on this. Not that I don't think we're like totally ruining anything, but or like stuff that, like, if you played this game, you probably knew it.
Yeah. But just how long in case. Do I have to give people before I can talk about the ending of Tears of the Kingdom?
If you don't want to know about the ending of Tears of the Kingdom, good to see you guys. Email us at kenactivity@nintendoreport.com. Talk to you next week. That whole, like, the only way I can do this is by swallowing this and I am become dragon is
Here's the thing. I do like the, like, I feel like the whole, like, literally becoming one of the dragons is very, like, weird and mythological and fits the tone of Breath of the Wild's Hyrule really well. Like, that part I'm okay with.
I think the execution of it is horrific.
Oh, yeah, because it's the plot in a Breath of the Wild Zelda game. Yeah,
and it's also, like, the way the dragon's eyes look.
It's a little goofy, yeah.
They're bugging.
But I
do also like that I did the Deku Tree thing before, so you find out where the Master Sword is. So, like, I pulled the sword out of her head before I even got to knowing. Like, although I did kind of just piece it together, but, like, I did not complete the tiers before I got to the point where I could pull it out of her head. And, like, why is this fucking dragon crying? If I get this out of his head, will it stop crying?
Did Alex ever tell you that he did the fucking, like, light temple as his second dungeon?
How?
Spirit temple.
Yes.
Yeah, that's my second dungeon.
I still haven't done that, but I have heard from people where it's just that, like, yo, just wait. Like actually get to the point when you do it. It's way cooler.
Wait, you haven't done the light temple?
No.
Wait a second.
I haven't done the fucking water temple.
Have you not finished the game?
No.
No.
Oh, Jesus, Neil. Why didn't you leave the podcast at the spoiler warning?
Because I already know what happens. It's the kind of thing where, like, you can't exist being at a video game website for 4 months after this game and not know.
You have,
like,
to mainline it.
Yeah. No, but, like, I've legitimately put 100 hours into this video game and I haven't finished it.
Just another 50. That's all you need.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's my. It's there. I forget. I think I'm in one of the labyrinths. That was where I left off. But yeah, I have like 110 shrines or something fucking ridiculous. I've been having a lot of fun with that. It's just the story has burnt me out so hard.
So bad.
And also that, like, and I did see my wife play the water dungeon, and the water dungeon seems meh.
The water dungeon barely counts as it's a room.
The water dungeon was not great.
Dungeon is a bold term.
The Goron one, the fire temple was rad.
That might be my favorite part of the game.
I think that's my favorite dungeon.
Yeah, it's the only dungeon where, like, you get to it and you're like, oh, that's like the scale. I mean, then you get inside and it's like, oh, go push the 5 buttons. Okay, cool. Got it.
But I also liked about that is that you could use your powers to kind of, like, fudge some of
you could totally cheat it. Yeah.
Yeah. I like doing a hybrid of, like, I'm going to try and do it the way they intended, but also I'll fudge it every now and then.
I think one of the last things I did in that was like, screw it. Use this rocket shield and just go over here.
Yeah.
Rocket shield's so broken.
It's so broken.
Yeah.
Best way possible.
No, like, it rules. And, like, I plan on slowly playing this game until they announce DLC or a new one.
Yeah.
Tears of the Kingdom is like the ultimate, like, realization that video games and how we perceive how good they are is always within a context. Like, it's a game that on paper is just better than Breath of the Wild in every single way, maybe except for story. I don't mind the story, but, like, on paper it should be a 10 out of 10 no contest, but it seems like with every passing month, especially in this year when so many great games are coming out week after week, the thermometer on Tears of the Kingdom gets lower and lower.
It's really good. It's just when you take away, like, when you only evaluate it for what it brings to the table and not what was at the table when it got there.
Honestly,
all that stuff's good, but, like, it's not I don't know. I don't want to say it's a DLC. Like, I don't think that's fair.
When I think about what I don't like about that game, it's basically just the story. Like,
yeah,
even parts of the dungeons that I'm like, eh, I'm like, well, it's better than the Divine Beasts. Like, I can definitely give it that. Like, I wish they were. It's kind of had like if I were to review this game based on the 100 hours and not actually finishing it, I'd probably be in that 9.95 realm for largely similar reasons why I gave Breath of the Wild a 9 or 9.5. And I would still stand by, like, I think Breath of the Wild is one of the, like, qualitatively best video games ever made, at least, like, of its day. Like the game is hugely important, et cetera, et cetera. I just think there's flaws. And that's the way I operate in games, is that, like, if there are things that I don't think are good about a game that stand out and impede my progress, then it's probably not going to be a 10. It was, you know, the inventory stuff in Breath of the Wild for Tears of the Kingdom. It's like the story, like, actively harms parts of the game, in my eyes, like, because I do think it, like, makes some of those dungeons, like, not as engaging because each one is just the same fucking story.
Yep. Yeah.
Like, that's honestly part of the reason why I did two dungeons pretty, like, relatively early on, and then was like, oh, it's just the same thing over and over again. And was like, I'm not going to bother doing these other two for a very long time.
It bothers me because that's not an inherent problem of an open world game. Like, that's a problem that they invented. Yep. Like, go play something like Witcher 3 and, like, look at that. It has an open world while telling a linear story. Like,
I mean, I also think that Breath of the Wild did a better job of that. I mean, like, I don't think the Divine Beasts themselves are great dungeons, but it does a much better job of not having, like, yes, you are, you know, getting the sage and, you know, getting the Divine Beast to be on your side and stuff. Like, there's a formality there, but you're not showing the same backstory.
It's not literally the same cutscene.
The same lead in of, like, oh, there's somebody calling my name. And it's like, Link, open your goddamn mouth and tell them that it's just like your old ancestor. Like, you have heard this story 4 times. I've seen all these memories. You have so much knowledge. Write it down if you don't want to talk, man.
Well, and even if each sage just gave, like, a new piece of information, like, you could do it in a non-linear way where it doesn't matter which way you do it, but you get this, it's the same monologue every time.
Yeah, and, like, you have, I don't know, written the book on bullshit Zelda lore. We're into this stuff. I hang on your every word when you make videos about this. And they had so much capacity for doing so much cool stuff. And, like, that, those opening 15 minutes are electric.
Well, and that's the problem.
And they just shit the bed.
Well, they went into the lore and, like, dug stuff up. And it was like, okay. And then they were like, but not really. Like, it's like, all right, well, then just leave it. Like, I don't expect you. Do we get to see
more Zonai? No. Right, like, no, like, you don't.
Right. Like, if you're not.
What's more about them? We will tell you nothing else about them.
Right, I had no expectation of you guys delivering on existing lore. Like, I've been playing these games for a while now. Yeah. I understand what the expectation is. So if you're going to do it, then, like, actually do it. If you want to bring up the imprisoning war, a thing from Link to the Past, like, great. But then don't just go, like, but not really that imprisoning war. Like, okay, why'd you call it that then? Yeah. Like, you could have called it something else.
And I mean, and it is funny because this conversation makes me want to go back and start playing Tears of the Kingdom again.
It's a great game.
It is very good video. I love, like, masterpiece, all the tools, like, that they give you. It's incredible, like, all the tools that you give you, like, even, like, the fucking cube bosses, the constructs. I love fighting them because it's just so fun to play around with it.
I think the frustrating fusion,
it's really cool. Even if, you know, I know Matt hates it when, like, he just wants a stick that he can use, even though part of the game is, you know, giving up your darling weapons and resource management.
Hi, Matt. Yeah, I think the thing that frustrates me about that game, while thinking it is a fantastic masterpiece of a game, is that it gets all of the really hard stuff exactly right.
Yep.
and yep. then messes up the stuff that Zelda has literally been doing effortlessly for 30 years.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like, we've always been good at telling a story. Like, when did this become the hard part? Why is this suddenly a problem? We've always been good at sprinkling little lore clues into our games.
You know,
why are we now suddenly contradicting literally the previous game that this one has to be canon to because it's a direct yeah. sequel? Like, yeah.
I will stand with you on the music on this one, John. I think
and
here
honestly,
they messed it up.
The music in this one is better than Breath of the Wild. It's still not good.
There are some really good jams.
There yeah. are some great but, jams.
Yeah.
The goddamn Kolgara boss fight, one of my favorite like
yeah.
songs in a Zelda game.
And it's for, you know, can dunk on the dungeons. I think the way they build the music with a lot of these dungeons is so good.
And it's smart because it's just for each button you push, we're going to add an extra layer onto this song. And that's yep. like, well done.
Yeah. But, and even, I mean, how they integrate the depths, even if I feel like the depths do. I almost wish it was in the full map, but the depths are very, very cool.
I think the depths need regional theming.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Like, they're great, but they're a divine beast, you know, like there's only one look. I yeah. think that looks really cool, but
it is a good creepy look, but
it's a great yeah. look.
Yeah. yeah.
No, the depths are my favorite part of this game.
And even the sky, like once I feel like once you open up more of the map, like there's a part of me that wishes the sky was more open or not more open. Like there was more to do there, but there's a decent amount to do up there.
Yeah.
I mean,
to give you a waft wing.
Yeah, it would be cool.
That actually, I'm kind of one of my hopes for DLC is like, give me something that can just freely fly without me having to worry about building something so I can really have fun up there.
I mean, they did the motorcycle. Just.
Yep. I want that, but for the sky.
Yep.
Anyway.
So Mario.
Yeah. yeah, we're going to find out more about Mario. But yeah. No, I mean, that is for all the complaints that I levied at Tears of the Kingdom. Now, I'm just like, if we finish this, I could probably play some Tears of the Kingdom.
Right.
I'll probably at some point. I mean, it's something that like I've gotten into the routine where my wife and I will, you know, every other week or something, sit down and she'll play in her game. She's like 60 hours in, I think. Mm-hmm. And I'll play some of mine.
Has she finished a story?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is she farther or less far or roughly
less
the same
far.
Spot as you?
Okay. I think she's done two dungeons and I've done three.
Okay.
She because she does not exist on the internet and operating a video game website, she does not know anything about the late game stuff.
Man, that sounds nice. I'll bet I would like video games more if I existed like that.
Yeah, that's what like every now and then. And she's like, I haven't heard anything about like that specific thing. I was like, then I will shut the fuck up.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, that sounds great.
Other than like I've like just like convulsed in like fury when I'm like, oh, the memories suck.
This will be suddenly this week. She'll be like, I think I'll listen to that connectivity show that Neil does.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why we had a spoiler warning.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then when Lauren and I finish it in 15 years, we can have her back on the show to talk about it.
Right. Well, it just in time for our game club before, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Zelda.
I do. I mean, like, really.
Dungeon.
It is also funny watching her play because like with this flex constructs, whereas like I'm talking about how like I'm like, oh, like I use all the powers to do this. It's like she plays such a conservative game. And it's always fascinating to watch her because she still gets results. It's just a completely different way than I play Zelda.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that I love about this game is how there is that flexibility in what you do.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. Once again, and I feel like I have to say this because I'll complain about this game a lot. It's great. It's really good. I gave it a 9.5.
I don't know. I did hear you changed that review score because Joel DeWitt.
You can't. Metacritic won't let me.
Yeah.
So it stays. I don't have that option.
I should just periodically lower the review for KOTOR 2. I'm so mad about that.
Dude, did you notice that there's finally a new Star Wars game remaster coming out and it's not by Aspyr?
Oh, wait, is that the Dark Forces one
Dark
is being
Forces
done by
is Night Dive.
Night Dive. Yeah.
Ooh, Night Dive is great.
Night Dive is great.
I did not put that together, but I'm very excited for that. I don't know if I like Dark Forces. Like, Dark Forces is one of those games where,
I love Dark Forces.
It's cool. Like, I don't think I've played it since, 1998.
I was going to say, if you like 90s FPS, then it's a great game.
I'm not surprised that John Raritan likes Dark Forces.
Here's the thing. Dark Forces, I didn't play Dark Forces until later on. It has so much in common with Shadows of the Empire. Like, I never realized until later, how much those games are, essentially doing the same thing. It also helps that they use a lot of the same sound effects, including the sound of the main character going whenever he gets hit is the same sound.
The same team?
It's LucasArts.
There's definitely overlap.
Yeah. But no,
that's right. LucasArts used to be a developer.
Yes. Yeah, they used to make games.
Yeah.
No, Dark Forces is great. But yeah, the main thing is I don't think Aspyr has touched a Star Wars game since KOTOR 2.
Oh yeah. You know what? I was just remembering the guy for the Metroid Prime, the dude who died, unfortunately pretty young, Mark High Hutchinson.
Mm-hmm.
He worked on Dark Forces and Shadows of the Empire.
Oh, there you go.
So there's definitely some overlap. I don't think it's the same exact team. I just remember because he was the director of Shadows of the Empire.
Yeah.
And he's at least credited on Dark Forces.
I would pay a lot of money for Night Dive to get a shot at Shadows of the Empire.
Yeah. No, I mean, Night Dive does incredible work. Like, they're.
Yeah.
I spent a couple nights playing. I think it's their Turok 2.
Mm-hmm.
I was just playing online multiplayer with that for a couple days, and it was incredible because it was just basically it's like I'm playing an N64. Like it runs smoothly. It just feels exactly like I remember it.
Yeah. Yeah. I binged the first Turok when they released the remaster of that. That is so good.
I still want to play. Was it Enslaved? Was that the
Power Slave.
Power Slave, yeah. Power Slave Exhumed is so good. Or whatever.
Yeah.
That's one that's on my wish list. When it goes on, if it ever goes on sale or in 2 years, I'll crack and then hate it, like Rebel Galaxy Outlaw.
That's fine.
But that is a game just because it seems like that is Metroid Prime, but 10 years earlier or whatever.
Yeah, no, it's those 90s FPS. So much experimentation that I don't think people always appreciated at the time. But then you look back at it now and you're just like, holy crap. These were all of the ideas that would influence the next two generations of consoles.
All right. I think that's a overlong episode that went on. Yep.
We almost ended at the right time. And then
we brought up Zelda. I bit my tongue because I'm expecting a Zelda episode at some point.
That's bold.
I mean
one day. I'm only half joking when I say it will be part of a game club for the next 3D Zelda game. Tears of the Kingdom spoiler cast.
Lauren and I were talking about Zelda kind of recently, and I made the crack about we'll finish up the game club in 2025. She's like, yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, like she usually can throw in time to that, but it is it's also like that. I mean, that's part of the reason why I've been very slow and lackadaisical about not rushing to finish it. It's one, I'm not reviewing it, so I didn't have to do it on a deadline for the first time for a Zelda game since Twilight Princess, which is freeing and weird. And Twilight Princess, I definitely binged it I was on a deadline just because I was in college and skipped classes to play it. But I also don't think there's going to be another Zelda game for 6 years. So I'm this is the only new one I'm going to get for a while. I'm going to take my time.
I'm hopeful they'll split that team off into multiple teams. With how successful Zelda's been, I feel like they are just, they can just afford to invest into Zelda.
Yeah. I'm very curious to see what the future of the series is going to be. And it is kind of weird that they haven't talked about DLC for Tears of the Kingdom at all, which either makes me think they won't do any, or if they do any, it's going to be super cool. Or they aren't doing DLC because they want to try to have a quicker turnaround on another game.
That would be fair. I'd be fine with that. I would also be fine with like a Xenoblade style DLC where like you get a new chunk of map and
yeah, maybe
a new story, some new mechanics. Yeah.
Yeah, have the DLC just be Majora's Mask.
Yeah.
Oh man. I'd be down.
Alright. Now before we talk more, let's end the show. Thanks for listening, everybody. Email us listenermail at connectivity@nintendoreport.com, and thanks for listening. Talk to you all next week, probably.
Bye.
Bye-bye.